This is Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station, England's first commercial radio station.
Well, 19 minutes past 1 a.m. on Midnight Surf Party, coming to you from the swingin'est sounds on 199, Radio Caroline North. That's the swingin'est one, little darlings, don't you forget it.
Hey, I just this is wonderful Radio London, where your hearing pains, where your hearing pains.
This is Radio 390, broadcasting on 388.1 meters in the medium wave band, Britain's most powerful commercial radio station.
Good morning, the world is bright and new. Sit tight, you're always right with Swingin' Radio England.
242 meters in the medium wave band, this is Radio Scotland.
This is Radio City broadcasting on 299 meters. A request on a postcard, please.
Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio. Wonderful music.
Big old time is 3 o'clock and Radio London is now closing down.
For no man will ever forget August the 14th, 1967.
When pirates ruled the waves, commemorating the 40th anniversary of the outlawing of Britain's offshore radio stations. Presented by Paul Rowley.
August the 14th, 1967 was a landmark day in the history of British broadcasting. The government's attempts to silence the offshore radio pirates, with one notable exception, had succeeded, ending a three-year diet of non-stop pop which began at Easter 1964. Radio Caroline was the brainchild of an enterprising Irishman, Ronan O'Reilly, who brought the European concept of ship-based radio to British shores for the first time. But it wasn't a pre-planned move and came about almost by accident. As a music promoter, he found difficulty getting a record deal for the then little-known singer, Georgie Fame.
It was impossible to get a massive amount of music that was available on record and an album, especially American music, to, you know, have it on the air, to be able to have radio plays on it. Because of the airtime, I mean, there was no BBC pop. I mean, there were a few hours a week, and they didn't take it very seriously. And there was the nighttime Luxembourg thing that was just geared to the record company's needs, and a very limited amount of exposure. So I remember very vividly recording a number with Georgie Fame called, I remember, Let the Sun Shine In.
Let the sun shine in, come on right away. Let the sun shine in, brighten the valley.
And I remember getting an acetate of it, and then I went around to Luxembourg and the BBC and various places. And I remember sitting in Luxembourg and them saying, well, like, no way, we're not giving it any airplay because it's not belonged to one of the major companies, record companies. So I thought, well, you know, there's only one way around that situation, and the only way around that situation was, in fact, was the system that Radio Caroline put together.
This is Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station. We are on the air every day from 6 in the morning to 6 at night. The time right now is 1 minute past 12, and that means it's time for Christopher Moore.
Hello and happy Easter to all of you. This is Christopher Moore with the first record program on Radio Caroline. The first record is by the Rolling Stones, and I'd like to play it for all of the people who worked to put the station on the air, and particularly for Ronan.
It wasn't the slickest of starts, but the first live broadcast from Radio Caroline at Easter 1964 signalled the end of the BBC's radio monopoly. The station was housed on a 700-ton former Danish passenger ferry, which anchored off Felixstowe in Suffolk. It was a powerful signal from a 165-foot aerial, but the British authorities couldn't do anything about it. It was outside the three-mile limit in international waters, and therefore outside the control control of the government. But just as Ronan O'Reilly almost stumbled on a new industry, so it was when he came to name his new baby.
The biggest influence at that time on me, politically, was in fact President John F. Kennedy. But the actual moment of decision to call this station Radio Caroline was made, I was flying across to America at the time, and right across the sort of center spread of the Washington Post was a photographic in his Oval Office, and climbing under his desk, disrupting the entire works of government, was 1 3-year-old Caroline Kennedy. And that's the moment when I said, that's got to be the name.
The initial reaction from the British authorities was to ignore Caroline, believing it to be a fad that would soon disappear. The BBC made no attempt to amend its existing format on the Light programme, where pop records were limited to a weekend ration of Pick of the Pops, Saturday Club and Easy Beat. As for the rest...
This is the BBC Light programme.
Wakey wake!
Hi! Mrs. Dale's Diary. A recording of the daily happenings in the life of a doctor's wife.
Good morning, ladies. Our first request this morning is from Mrs. Ada Spillington, Oak Lodge, Crawley, Sussex. She says you'd like some jolly music to help you start the day, so what about this?
Keep our good day clean as Ada long.
Yes, what about it? It wasn't too difficult to see how the pirates attracted such a mass appeal. Caroline had tapped into a large and responsive market of young listeners that weren't being catered for. Within days of its launch, the ship was besieged with mail. It claimed 7 million listeners in its first week. Normally cautious advertising executives had begun to take notice of the bright, unorthodox style of the new medium.
And that, I'm afraid, winds up the early show from me, yours truly, Simon D, for this morning. My last one on board for, as I say, at least 2 weeks. Perhaps 3 weeks. Perhaps forever. Perhaps you'll never see me again. Anyway, I've very much enjoyed sitting here for the 3 hours every morning and playing your records round till, as we say, nearly 9 o'clock. So, until we meet again at this time in the morning, take very good care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Caroline's only commercial competition was from the continent, from the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, the nightly Station of the Stars, which relied on block advertising from the major record labels which has so dismissively shunned Ronan O'Reilly.
For all that's worthwhile, your radio dial is on Radio Luxembourg.
Good evening, friends. This is Horace Batchelor at the microphone. Kensham, spelt K-E-Y-N-S-H-A-M, Kensham, Bristol.
And hello there, record fans, wherever you are. Once again, it's time for another roundup of all your favorite British and American recording artists, brought to you by the Decca Record Company for your special delight tonight. Oh, excuse me, madam.
Yes?
I work for Luxembourg, you see.
Oh, I am sorry. I'm afraid I can't help you.
No. I was hoping you'd play chaperone to this young fellow.
Within weeks, Caroline faced an offshore competitor. By the end of April, the Mi Amigo, once the home of the Swedish pirate ship Radio Nord, dropped anchor off Frinton in Essex, close by the MV Caroline. On May the 12th, it began regular broadcasting.
Radio Atlanta, on our very first day, our Champers Day, bringing you brighter broadcasting and the finest sounds around.
At 201 meters, you're in tune with the Bob Scott Show, Living, Loving, Happy Radio Atlanta, the ship that rocks the ocean.
Now the summer fun time here on the good ship Radio Atlanta stands.
But for a quirk of fate, Radio Atlanta could have been Britain's first offshore pirate. The project had been devised by an Australian music publisher, Alan Crawford, 2 years before. He'd been in negotiation with Ronan O'Reilly, with both their ships fitted out in the Irish port of Greenore, conveniently owned by O'Reilly's father. So not surprisingly, Caroline got the priority. George Saunders was Atlanta's engineer.
Alan Crawford told me that there had been a trading agreement originally between the two organisations. Mi Amigo was to go down to London and the Caroline ship was to go off the Isle of Man. It didn't work out like that, I'm afraid. The Frederica sailed first. She bombed it down to the Thames estuary and, of course, opened up as Radio Caroline. And there's a snag that they also had the crystals on board, which controlled our transmitting frequency. So when we came along, we couldn't do anything and we were sitting off Frinton, unable to transmit.
But within 6 weeks of Atlanta going on air, the two organisations organisations were forced to make peace and restored the original plan.
Caroline, the sound of the nation. Caroline, the sound of the land. Caroline, the sound of the nation. Caroline.
It was a mutually advantageous decision. It eliminated the competition, and it allowed the merged company to secure increased advertising revenue, proclaiming itself a truly national service. Caroline South covered London and the South East. Caroline North served Northern England, North Wales and parts of Ireland and Scotland. But to get to the Isle of Man, the MV Caroline had to circle the coastline, broadcasting as she travelled.
The Mojo's in Roanoke tonight. Well, after Brighton, we are turning a slight fraction south. And
the chief DJ on board, Tom Lodge, who was joined by fellow presenters Jerry Layton and Alan Turner.
The trip itself was amazing because of the interest of people ashore. And I hit on a very simple idea of flashing a mirror at the shoreline because we could see lots of people watching us through the binoculars. When you started flashing the shoreline with this mirror, it was as though someone threw a switch ashore and lit up the illuminations because the response was coast-long. All these lights of headlights and mirrors flashing.
Why not flash your headlights at us? We'd love to see the whole coast lighting up. Yes, lighting up, yes, yes.
Once Caroline dropped anchor off the Isle of Man, it didn't take long to establish itself.
If you're thinking of advertising on Radio Caroline North, all you have to do is drop a line to Radio Caroline, 61 Lord Street, Liverpool 2. Or you can telephone Liverpool Central, 8393.
Radio, go, go.
From the north of England, you're in line with the Go-Go Boys of Caroline.
One of the Go-Go Boys was Graham Webb, an experienced broadcaster from Australia who served on both ships.
Oh, the South Ship was far more intimate. The North Ship, you had a lot more independence. We had letters coming in from all over the north part of England, Scotland. We had them from Ireland and from Isle of Man, of course. We could pick up 800 letters on one drop, and we couldn't wait to have them distributed to see which DJ got more letters.
The success of Caroline prompted a series of imitators, all keen to secure a slice of the pirate radio booty.
Of London late at night.
The Ripper, Jack the Ripper,
with a little black bag that's oh so tight.
The Ripper, Jack the Ripper,
he's got a big black cloak hanging down his back.
The Ripper, Jack the Ripper,
well that's a one big cat I just hate to fight.
The Ripper, Jack the Ripper,
well it won't stand as deep.
The flamboyant showman screaming Lord Such may not have been a success musically or politically, but he was adept at publicity, and in May 1964 he opened his own radio station, the eponymous Radio Such, with the blood-curdling Jack the Ripper as the first record.
This is Britain's most exciting radio station. This is Radio Such, the voice of the teenagers of Britain on 197 Medium Wave.
The time he starts his dirty shove around.
But the broadcast didn't come from the uncomfortable surrounds of a sea boat. Instead, David Such sees the vacant wartime military fort shivering sands in the Thames estuary. Early broadcasts were marked with late-night readings from Lady Chatterley's Lover, read by the bogus lord himself.
Lady Chatterley's Lover to keep the fishermen awake at night because they were bumping into each other. And Fanny Hill, and the people loved it. We had a great big fat mailbag asking for more. First of all, we started on a boat, and when the boat got its insurance taken away, then we had to go to the gun towers. We were the first on the gun towers, and I was campaigning because they wasn't playing my records on the BBC. The BBC only had the Archers at the time to offer you.
Whenever Jack the Ripper ever shows his face.
The Ripper!
The nearby Red Sands was the next fort to be ambushed by the more middle-of-the-road Radio Invicta.
You're in tune with your good music station, Radio Invicta, broadcasting on 306.1 metres in the medium wave band.
and 11 a.m. means, of course, it's time for Strictly for Highbrown.
Not surprisingly, Radio Invicta was short-lived, and Light Radio Such provided little challenge to Caroline South. There was no serious competition until 2 days before Christmas, 1964.
You're hearing things.
You're hearing things.
On Wonderful Radio.
The sound of Big L broadcasting on 266 metres from a converted minesweeper, the Galaxy, which anchored off Walton-on-the-Naze in Essex. The format was American.
Wonderful Radio London.
So was the finance.
Whoopee.
Even the jingles were made in Dallas. And whereas Caroline had a laissez-faire approach to its output, Radio London's managing director, Philip Birch, a widely travelled advertising executive, adopted a more rigid, disciplined style.
Right, girls, have a listen to this.
Look your best, rain or shine. Rely on Yvette face powder. Yvette, beauty at a young price.
Care for your complexion.
Keep it clear and beautiful.
Face powder by Yvette.
Only from Woolworths beauty counters.
Yes, get down there when you do.
Ed Stewart, an out-of-work musician who became the station's chief DJ.
We worked the American format. You'd play a record from the top 40, 1 to 10. Second record would be 11 to 40. Then you'd play a revive 45, then an album track. Then you'd repeat again, 1 to 10, 11 to 40. Then you'd play your climber of the week. And if you had tards, then you'd play another album track. So that was the format we kept to rigidly every half hour, and that's why we succeeded.
Big new sound. Everybody's tuning to Channel 66 to hear new sounds because they know this is where they happen first. Let Channel 66 turn you on by turning on Channel 66.
Right now we're going to have a Revive 45 for you. This time it comes from Lynn Batty and one.
Many of the presenters like Tony Windsor, Dave Cash and Pete Brady had experience of commercial radio abroad. But Big L did unearth its own homegrown talent.
15 minutes after 5 o'clock and tonight we have a very special night for you, ladies and gentlemen. Not only do we have the Vernon's Pools program, but we also have the SEMA Bingo program as well, and that's a big deal because we get everybody down in the studio. We get Earl Richmond, the captain of the ship, and Earl, everybody to take witness that the game is straight, friends. So
the unmistakable Kenny Everett, then just out of his teens in his first job in radio.
You know, if we want to do a bit of the old, well, we just can't.
It wasn't long before his zany wit, innovative style, and obsession with tape machines became apparent.
I've just got one thing to say about Radio London. It's wonderful.
Though he did take time to acclimatise to being at sea.
I got an interview with Radio London lot, and I was on the next day, heaving on the North Sea, being terribly, awfully ill. I was flat out for a month.
It's smooth sailing with the highly successful sound of Wonderful Radio London.
The station was attracting sponsorship. By the middle of 1965, Radio London was bringing in £70,000 a month in advertising revenue.
If you want to sell in England, if you want to tell everybody what you've got, radio's the way to do it. Radio London is the very spot.
For further information about Radio London and what it can mean to you, contact Radlon Sales Limited, 17 Curzon Street, London. Do it today.
Call Mayfair 5361.
Playing pop records at sea may have been an anti-establishment concept, but big business saw its potential.
Square meal nourishment, that's what you get with Weetabix. Start the day with Weetabix, Weetabix, Weetabix. Lovely wheaty Weetabix, Weetabix for breakfast.
Strike it rich with Richmond. Light up a Richmond, strike it rich.
Richest flavor yet in a tipped cigarette.
Light up a Richmond, strike it rich with Richmond.
Just 4 and 3 for 20. A good cigarette at that price is a find these days. Now's the time to switch to Richmond.
Light up a Richmond, 4 kinds of Sun Silk shampoo.
But the biggest turnover came from an unlikely sugar daddy in the shape of an American evangelist with a nightly fire and brimstone sermon. But, not for the last time, it cost Kenny Everett his job.
We had a program called
The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong now brings you the plain truth about today's world news.
And greetings, friends around the world. World leaders today are engrossed in a fantastic nightmare.
And he used to come on. He used to come on and say, ladies and gentlemen, the world is falling about your ears. People are being nasty to each other and killing, murder, rape, and horror. Send money now, and I'll send you a pamphlet telling you how to live better, everybody. And this went on for ages until I once did a crack about him. He was over in this country, and I nattered about this program over there, saying what a dreadful idea it was and how boring it was, because it was right in the middle of my show. This half-hour tape used to come on, The World Tomorrow. So I complained about it over the wireless, being an enfant terrible. And I got the boot, because they used to pay about £250 a night for this show to go on the air. I mean, they were paying me, but the religious company was paying them. So they considered it was a good deal to get rid of me and keep the tapes.
Radio London reminds you, go to the church of your choice.
There was now real choice on the medium wave. Caroline had to adopt a heavy sales pitch to compete.
Stampede. There's no stopping you with Caroline. Advertise on Radio Caroline and make 1965 your boom year. Contact Caroline Sales, 6 Chesterfield Gardens, London, West 1. Ring Hyde Park, 9721.
Finders Fresh. That's just the word for Finders.
Play Caroline Cash Casino with Finders and be in line for big cash prizes.
The highly successful Caroline Cash Casino was the first daily competition on British radio. Caroline also had the ability to discover new talent on record and on air.
The time on Radio Caroline, Britain's first commercial radio station, 14 minutes to 6. Tony Blackburn here with All Systems.
Tony Blackburn, a natural broadcaster with an easygoing charm, later to become the first voice on Radio 1.
I remember for the very first day, it was July the 25th, 1964, I remember that well, sailing out on the tender boat and seeing this little ship, the Mi Amigo, and thinking how wonderful this is giving the government so many problems. And I thought, I'm so glad I'm a part of this. Caroline was great, that set it all off, but being a part of Big L Radio London with those wonderful jingles, I think that's the best radio station that this country's ever produced, you know. I don't think it's been bettered.
We can do, because after all, we're only here to please you. If you enjoy hearing the old ones, well, only too pleased to...
Going back in time on the sounds of the nation, it's the Caroline Flashback.
Another DJ who jumped ship from Caroline to Big L was the redoubtable Keith Skews, a distinguished biographer of offshore radio, with a keen ability to spot a hit record.
I was sent a reel-to-reel tape of a recording of Mr. Tambourine Man by an unknown group, somebody called The Birds. I played this record, and unbeknown to me, Caroline House, which was where our head office was in London in Mayfair, was receiving dozens of phone calls, what is this record? It was eventually picked up by CBS Records and issued officially, and it became a number one hit.
Caroline Sure Shot!
Another American group championed by pirate radio were the Walker Brothers.
Girl, you've been so good to me, staying by my side through the bad times. All my dreams never came true somehow, but things are gonna be different now. And the baby,
within 18 months of arriving in Britain, they had two number ones. Drummer Gary Leeds believes they owe their success to the ships.
We didn't realize it, just coming over from California, it seemed like the only way you could get your records played or anything, you'd have to be in the charts. So the only other way there was this pirate radio. And they would start playing these records, and they played ours, and we went out in the boat a couple times. And of course, if it wasn't for that system, half of us wouldn't be where we were whatsoever.
Away that shabby dress,
buy yourself the finest things in town, girl.
The stations were coming to the attention of Harold Wilson's Labour government, elected in October 1964 after 13 years in opposition. Its postmaster general was a young Tony Benn, who wasn't a fan.
The pirate radio question, where people went into these little ships and structures around the coast and broadcast without paying any royalties to the musicians. I mean, it was the theft of the people's royalty rights and used wavelengths that hadn't been allocated, so they interfered with European wavelengths. It was a factor that I used in order to try and bring about some broadcasting reforms. I think the danger of a huge number of stations where they're all engaged in pop music and right-wing propaganda is one you have to consider. But in 64, it was just a theft of public property rights in order to make a quick buck, which is what capitalism is all about.
Send 5 shillings to Caroline Club, Membership Department, 6 Chesterfield Gardens, London, West 1.
Presenting Caroline's Men of a New Breed.
Music, that's our little name.
The New Breed were reproducing very quickly. By the middle of 1966, there were 10 pirate stations broadcasting around the British coastline. The short-lived Radio Invicta maintained its middle-of-the-road format to become King Radio.
You're tuned to KING, transmitting on 236 metres on the medium wave band. The time...
King Radio soon adopted a new call sign, Radio 390, billing itself as Britain's only sweet music station.
Radio 390, presenting Eve, the woman's magazine of the air, brings you Keyboard Cavalcade.
Brian Cullinford was its chief announcer.
It was very primitive to begin with. I mean, it's towering up in the air. Some say 65, some say 90 feet above the water. And we had to leap from the boat onto a sort of wooden cage, which was then winched up to the towering towers. But the variety of... I mean, we started with trad jazz, we had R&B, country and western. We did classics, we did children's programmes. The instruction we were told to give all the announcers was try and be like the BBC Home Service was 10 years ago. So actually, we were probably initially more formal even than the BBC was then.
Let's listen to Mrs. Mills.
Radio 390 also produced one of the most inadvertently amusingly titled programmes of the time.
Radio 390, your British family station, brings you Masters of the Organ.
Masters of the Organ, what would Kenny Everett have made of it? In another name change, Radio Such became Radio City, the Tower of Power on 299.
Radio City, it sounds fine on 299.
Number one this week on City, the Mop Tops and the story of Eleanor Rigby.
Radio City, your host on the coast.
Another wartime fort in the Thames, the Knock John became the home for the low-budget Radio Essex, proclaiming itself as Britain's first county radio service.
By now you are in tune with your spectrum of sound. Radio Essex, transmitting on 222 metres on the medium wave band, where the time right now is just...
The new year of 66 brought in Radio Scotland, broadcasting from the lightship The Comet, initially anchored off Dunbar.
On 242 metres in the medium wave band, this is Radio Scotland.
This is a proud moment for me, for after many months of trial and tribulation, Radio Scotland is now a floating reality.
You're tuned right now to 242, baby. That's Radio Scotland swinging for you. Behind the microphone here, Roger Gale.
Roger Gale, a former Caroline disc jockey, now an ever-so-respectable Conservative MP. Is he embarrassed by his past?
No, I'm not in the least embarrassed by it. Far from it. As a Conservative, I can honestly say it was in the best traditions of free enterprise. We felt as if we were buccaneers. We were outside the three-mile limit. We were creating new noises and new experiences for a listening public. I found myself broadcasting sometimes 14 hours a day, 8 hours non-stop, on one occasion 36 hours non-stop broadcasting under bizarre circumstances. I don't think there's any doubt at all that the pirate radio stations changed the face of broadcasting. Whether for good or worse is for other people to judge, but it certainly changed it.
Radio Scotland clan, we have our own clan right here on Radio Scotland. It's the 242 clan. if you'd like to join. It's a five-bob postal order too.
Roger Gale also served on the Ocean 7 off Scarborough, home of Radio 270.
Frank, I feel singing as only he can, and singing so well, Lovesick Blues was kind of big about November 62, and doesn't it sound good in September 66?
For as little as £4, you can advertise on 270 and maybe double the income from your business. Write to Radio 270 Scarborough, Yorkshire for details.
Hi there, everyone. Yours truly, Paul Burnett here with you. At 7 o'clock, 2 hours of swinging sounds coming your way right now.
Paul Burnett, like most of the 270 presenters, seemingly having difficulty adopting an accent somewhere between York and New York. But one station wasn't interested in British DJs simply aping their transatlantic cousins. Radio England shipped in a boatload of experienced American presenters known as the Boss Jocks, and parked them just down the coast from Caroline and London, in a blaze of publicity for their launch in May 1966.
Let's look into the future time. Pick the tune that's gonna climb. Breaking with the sound of tomorrow. Swinging Radio England.
It's 3 minutes after two now. Ronald Quett on the radio from Swinging Radio England, home of the Boss Jocks. No, that music.
Golly.
Gee whiz.
And yet, for all its brash fanfare, the station did unearth two British presenters synonymous with offshore radio, Johnny Walker and Roger Day.
Ronald Quett on the radio.
Golly,
good afternoon to you. If you're on the beach in Fritton, how in the world are you?
Here were these guys who were big hotshot DJs from America. Ronnie Quinn was my hero, came from WFUN in Miami, and Larry Dean came from a New York news station, and Rick Randall, and, you know, I really admired them, and obviously thought they could come over and just wipe Caroline and London off the map, and they'd be the number one in no time, and it didn't work out that way for them.
Radio England, banner line. This news is big news in the world now.
This is Jerry Smithwick reporting Radio England banner lines, a feature of the Radio England Department of News and Public Affairs.
We were the amateurs, myself and Johnny, you know, we were learning the trade. And these Americans have been in it for years, and they were slick and professional. But slick and professional didn't go down well. We got all the mail, and it caused a bit of friction because of that, you know. But we learned to live together eventually. But that's why, because they liked the warmth and the Englishness, I guess, of us. You know, they didn't take too kindly to the people from America, I guess.
It's Roger Day. I'm swinging.
Broadcasting 4.5 miles from Fritton to Essex Coast, is Britain's first 24-hour most music station. On 227 meters in the medium wave band, this is Swingin' Radio England. The time is now 2:06 p.m.
For the best sounds around, make it on by Oscar's Groovy Grotto, the swingingest discotheque in Essex. Open.
What was unique about the laissez-faire, the home of Radio England, was that it also housed a sister service, Britain Radio, whose middle-of-the-road style was a forerunner to Radio 2.
Step up to a new level of musical velvet. Smooth sounds of the smart set, hallmark of quality, Britain Radio.
You're listening to the bright new sounds of Britain Radio, serving the British Isles.
Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio. With music for this, that and the other.
But pirate radio wasn't just about pop and adverts. Radio London pioneered the first non-BBC radio news bulletins. Well, almost.
Wonderful Radio London. News around the clock.
We had a newsroom.
Woohoo! It was a big room with a VHF radio in it. And a typewriter. And we used to listen to Richie Baker or whoever on VHF doing the news, and we used to type it out and jiggle it around and then run across the deck to the studio. Go,
Radio London News.
And then do the bit. But they caught us out one day because the Home Service put out a bogus news item one day to catch us out. And we, of course, took it down on the typewriter, jiggled it about and read it over our service. So they knew then that we were copying their news.
On the half hour, Radio London News tells you more, says it better.
News, for the most part, was an afterthought. On Caroline North, Ray Terror believed it just got in the way of his show.
One of my favourite horrible tricks was when someone was reading the news. It was a total handover, I just say, and here is the news, bonk. Well, then they had all the paperwork, because they had no desk, they just had the chair they sat in. And while sitting in the corner, as they were doing it, I'd sneak over and set fire to them, to the paper they were reading, and they'd be, oh, murders! Set me on fire! But, I mean, the newsreader would say that. We used to say what was happening, which was tremendous, you know.
This has been Caroline Newsbeat.
But in June 1966, the content of one Caroline bulletin effectively sealed the fate of offshore radio.
Newsbeat, presenting Caroline headline news and weather.
37-year-old Reg Calvert, manager of many pop beat groups, including The Fortunes, and owner of the offshore radio station Radio City, was shot dead in a country mansion near Saffron Walden, Essex, early this morning. A man is reported to be helping the Essex police in their inquiries into the shooting. A shroud of mystery has surrounded the activities of Mr. Calvert during the past 2 weeks, with conflicting reports being issued as to the future of his station. Last Monday, the radio chief asked detectives from Scotland Yard to investigate an alleged boarding of his radio station by...
The man helping with inquiries was Major Oliver Smedley, a respectable businessman in his 50s. He was subsequently charged with Reg Calvert's murder. The charge was later reduced to manslaughter, but he was eventually cleared by a jury at Chelmsford Crown Court on the grounds that he acted in self-defence. The dispute was over the ownership of transmitter equipment aboard the fort. It transpired there was a bitter wrangle behind the scenes involving both Caroline and Radio London to take over the station. Tom Edwards was Radio City's senior announcer.
I heard the news. I actually went back on the station after it had been raided, and the raiders were still out there, and the news filtered through because I was aware of helicopters flying around, newsmen and aircraft. It hurt at the time because I'd only been with Reg the night before. So the Marine Offences Bill was coming out, but the death of Reg Calvert, I think, actually speeded up the process.
Radio City News, as it happens, every hour.
The Marine Offences Bill made it illegal for any British citizen to work, supply or finance the offshore stations. A campaign was mounted.
Put free radio to the public vote. For nearly 3 years now, Radio London has been bringing you free entertainment at no cost to you, the taxpayer. Now the Postmaster General has submitted a bill to Parliament which attempts to stop this station broadcasting by imposing sanctions against us. And we ask you today to write to the Prime Minister and ask for his help. The address is the Right Honourable Harold Wilson, Prime Minister, 10 Downing Street, London, SW1. All we are asking for is fair treatment.
The government wants to close them down, but we want them to stay. They're playing sounds that we all like, so don't take them away.
When you're walking down the street with your transistor radio, everybody has a good time. You can dance to the beat of your transistor radio, even when the sun don't shine. You can hear your favorite rock and roll, rhythm and blues with a lot of soul.
Some swinging DJs playing top 40 records, they can really turn you on. Now the government's trying to close down the stations. What'll happen when they're gone? You won't hear the music that you like any old time of day. Take them away.
Defences Bill has now had its final reading. A basic freedom is at stake. The freedom of a British subject to work where he wants to.
Under the government's Marine Offences Bill, British radio is delivered completely into the hands of the BBC.
You gotta fight for your pirate station now. Yeah. Hallelujah.
The offshore stations have brought pleasure to millions, but modern-day piracy had unearthed a number of unsavoury practices, boarding parties, questionable dealings, and ultimately the death of a central figure. The government was unmoved by the protests. In addition, the pirates are now being accused of payola. Towards the end of 1966, Johnny Walker, by now on Caroline South, was aware that the station's playlist was getting increasingly top-heavy, with records on the Major Minor label, an independent company with links to the station.
Radio Luxembourg sold chunks of airtime, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, paid for by record companies to play all their own records. So you didn't get a very good broad mix of music, you just got one label's output. Nobody thought there was anything wrong with that.
Ladies and gentlemen, here once again is the important voice of David McWilliams. Back on Major Minor.
David McWilliams, Days of Pearly Spencer, was one notable release.
The Days of Pearly Spencer. The race is almost run.
There were others like the Dubliners. We had to plug this music over and over and over again.
And as I went home on Tuesday night, as drunk could be, I saw a coat behind the door where my old coat should be.
And the Raymond Lefevre Orchestra. And the sort of like cheesy instrumental stuff. I mean, unfortunately, some of the records are really dire. There was one by Don Arden called Sunrise Sunset that I roundly trashed on air.
Sunrise, sunset.
And when I later broke my leg in a stock car racing accident and came into the Speakeasy Club in London, hobbling in a plaster, he was there and he nudged all his mates and said, there you go, he trashed my record, I got him in the end. He claimed credit for my broken leg.
But there wasn't much to laugh about for the radio revolutionaries. While the Marine Offences Bill was going through Parliament, the government sought to outlaw the fort-based broadcasters by legislation already on the statute book, the Wireless Telegraphy Act. Radio Essex, now known as BBMS, Britain's better music station, was forced to shut on Christmas Day. By February 1967, the troubled Radio City came to an abrupt end.
The time right now on Radio City, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly 12 midnight. For me, Tom, it was for the very last time on Radio City. It's a very good night to you, ladies and gentlemen. God bless, and thank you for being a marvellous audience. Good night, and goodbye.
By late July, the most successful pirate had to announce that it, too, was throwing in the towel.
Here now is the announcement you've all been waiting for. With the passing of the Marine Broadcasting Bill, Radio London regrets to inform its listeners that after nearly 3 years of broadcasting, it'll be forced to close down in mid-August.
Broadcasting. Mr. Paul Brown, the opposition spokesman on broadcasting, spoke of the great opportunity that had been missed by banning commercial radio from Britain. He said that the combination of the BBC and commercial stations could have given Britain programmes of a variety and quality unequalled anywhere in the world.
Bulletin. Stand by. Here is a Radio London News Bulletin.
And before the end of the month, the sweet music of Radio 390 had turned sour.
I've never been so happy as while I've been running Radio 390. I can't believe that this is the end, but for now, all I can say is what I always say. Take care of yourselves. Good night. And God bless.
The station's managing director, Ted Albury, who later became a top-selling spy writer. Radio 227, the Dutch successor to Radio England, was now also off the air. Its sister station, Radio 355, joined it in the first week of August.
Yes, you've just tuned into
what is going to be the last 24 minutes of 2355's transmission. We're all very sad about that, but we have...
Tony Windsor, a broadcasting institution, sounding somewhat confused on the final day aboard the Laissez-Faire. The legislation came into effect at midnight August the 14th. Radio London was no more by 3 that afternoon.
And now, Radio London presents their final hour. Ed Stewart here with Myrtle. Hello, Myrtle.
Hello, Dale.
It's an amazing thing to have done, and to listen to that last hour now, it really is very moving. You know, we suddenly realise as the last notes of Big Lil vanished into the ether that was it. And when you listen to that piece of organ playing, that Hammond organ, you realise how unique and how brilliant it was in its simplicity. Dun, 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 dun.
Wonderful Big L.
Many thanks for all the plugs in the past. Thanks for being so nice about our records. Hope and wish you all the very best for the future, staff and DJs and whatever you do.
Hi there, this is Dusty Springfield on Radio London. And I suppose it's sort of sad, really, saying a goodbye.
This is Ringo, and I'm just saying cheerio to all you Radio London listeners, because, as you know, we're going off the air.
This is Mick Jagger here, and saying hello to Radio London. We're very sad to see you go.
Radio London.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony Blackburn here.
Hello, this is John Peel.
Hello, Big L listeners. Kenny Everett here. Big L will always be remembered as the fantastic radio station it is today because it's being chopped off at its prime. I think that if people do their bit and keep on remembering Big L and keep pestering for commercial radio to come back, then the same people who are in it now will take over again and we'll get Big L once again, only this time on land. So it'll be clearer, it'll be better in every way.
Wonderful Big L. Wonderful Radio London.
Big L time is 3 o'clock and Radio London is now closing down.
Many listeners have just joined Radio Caroline South on 259 metres in the medium wave band. They've joined us because a sister of offshore commercial radio has just gone off the air. We are now alone.
The Admiral Robbie Dale, leader of the so-called Beat Fleet, which was gearing up to sail into illegality at midnight.
I got a letter yesterday and I opened it up and I read this letter and it was from an old lady, a very old lady, and she was on about the Marine Defences Bill, you see. She said, "My dear young man," she said, "would you believe it must be at least 49 years since I committed an offence with a Marine?"
Radio, let's go, go!
Elsewhere, there were tears as Radio Scotland prepared to close down.
Only remains now for me to say, in the dying minutes of Radio Scotland, to again thank you from the bottom of my heart, and to say goodbye and God bless you all.
Tommy Shiel's final announcement, like his first, was on tape. Jack McLaughlin was with him on shore as he listened.
That was at the final Sunset Clan ball in Glasgow. And I don't know if you remember the crying shames. It was a couple of guys who had a sort of anthem to pirate radio. This time, be different, please say.
This time, be different. Please stay.
10 to 12, they sung that, and 2,000 kids linked arms in the Lokala ballroom and cried. Tommy Shields, the boss man, sat in the corner by a table crying. And then at midnight exactly, it was all over.
Off the Yorkshire coast, Radio 270 also prepared to switch off its transmitter.
Hell of a lot. This is Rusty Allen wishing you God bless and Godspeed. Good night and goodbye. Radio 270 is now closing down.
But at midnight, Caroline North stayed on air as a legal entity. The Marine Offences Bill only became law on the Isle of Man more than a fortnight later. But newsreader Dave Williams decided to leave, just as Martin Kane came on board.
The new disc jockeys arrived on the station, the ones who were going to replace those that decided they were going to leave. You realised it was all over. And we went off the ship for the last time. I remember going into Ramsey Harbour on the tender, and there were hundreds of people on the quayside to watch us when we came off. And it was a very moving occasion.
This time, be different. Please stay.
rather curious because we arrived there while the DJs that were coming off were just saying their goodbyes. It was a bit intrusive of us to rush into the studio and say, hi, we're taking over. So most of us sat in the mess room, but really it was a whole change of station just like that. Only the two engineers and Don Allen had remained.
The station's chief DJ, Daffy Don Allen, a legend on Caroline North, was on air at midnight. While over on Caroline South, Johnny Walker prepared to defy the law.
This is Radio Caroline. It is now 12 midnight.
I felt frightened. I felt a huge weight of responsibility on my shoulders. They reckon, you know, over 20 million people were listening all over the continent that night. So really exciting. And behind was the worry of how Robbie Dale and I were going to keep this station going, because we arrived that afternoon to find the DJs who hadn't had the onshore support that we'd just experienced. They'd been sitting out there on their own worrying about going into illegal and having to go into exile and having to go to Holland and not seeing their friends and family for who knows how long. And they decided when the boat came out at lunchtime, they got on it. So it was just Robbie and me and a newsreader to try and keep Caroline going.
Radio Caroline would like to extend its thanks to Mr. Harold Wilson and his Labour government for at last, after over 3.5 years of broadcasting, recognising this station's legality. It's right to be here. It's right to be broadcasting to Great Britain and the continent. It's right to give the music and service to the peoples of Europe, which we have been doing since Easter Sunday, 1964. And we, in turn, recognize your right as our listener to have freedom of choice in your radio entertainment, and, of course, that Radio Caroline belongs to you. It is your radio station, even though it costs you nothing. And as we enter this new phase in our broadcasting history, you naturally have our assurance that we intend to stay on the air because we belong to you and we love you. Caroline, continue.
But it took a lot more than love. The two Caroline ships lived on for a further 7 months, grounded by a lack of advertising, unpaid debts, and government-imposed isolation. For Johnny Walker, it was the end of a dream.
I'd finished on air at midnight, and, you know, it was like, see you tomorrow, and finally went to bed about 2:30, 3:00, and then 5:00, I was woken up. Somebody was shaking me awake, so you've got to get up, there's an emergency, you know. So I went upstairs, and there was about half a dozen really serious-looking Dutch sailors there, and they said, we're going to seal up the studio, get your things, you've got 10 minutes, and then we sealed it up and we towed the boat to Amsterdam, and so we're off the air. And all I could think about was everybody who just turned on their radio in the morning as they woke up to listen to Caroline, and there's nothing there. And you know, you don't move the dial because you think, well, maybe they're off the air, and so I'm not going to know when they come back, so I'll leave the dial where it is, you know, I won't change it. And we didn't come back, we just disappeared, and there was no explanation. And it's the moment they cut the anchor chain and let the chain fall in the ocean, I knew it was all over.
Love is all you need.
Nonetheless, Caroline's impact in the development of British broadcasting was immeasurable, creating the demand so the BBC had to provide a national pop service with Radio 1 and laying the groundwork for the future legalised commercial stations. And, 40 years on, Ronan O'Reilly's baby is still broadcasting.
Well, good evening, folks. This is Del Richardson with another 3 hours of good rocking tonight on the legendary Radio Caroline.
When pirates ruled the waves, commemorating the 40th anniversary of the outlawing of Britain's offshore radio stations. It was written, produced, and presented by Paul Rowley.
For no man will ever forget August the 14th, 1967.